The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
Let's walk the talk
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
And The Money Show brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking with secure cash management solutions for ultimate efficiency. That's African Asset. Absa is a registered FSP. Good evening and welcome to The Money Show. Lots to share with you this evening. Quite a dramatic day in many respects. EWN had a fabulous discussion. Clement Manyathela and Sidi Madia with the President earlier today. We'll reflect on that this evening. Also on Brian Molefe's going down and taking everybody with him testimony at the Zondo Commission today. We'll pick up on that. Also, David Peacock, our market commentator tonight. And we'll look at a company in Cape Town, a Friday file called Chill Cape Town. If you're looking for affordable luxury, that's what we're focusing on this evening. On a day where SAB, which of course is owned by the world's biggest brewing company, Anheuser-Busch InBev, announced it was cancelling another 2.5 billion rand investment. They were planning to do a 2.5 billion rand investment in South Africa in 2021. This is on top of a 2.5 billion rand investment that they cancelled last year. And they're not alone, because the last time we had a big booze ban, we saw Heineken, of course, cancel investment in a new 6 billion rand brewery in KZN. And then Consol Glass said, well, you know, can't sell beer. We can't make bottles. So we're not spending 1.5 billion rand on infrastructure. So if you just look at the booze ban and the cost, therefore, directly in terms of new investment, that is 12.5 billion rand just for Heineken, SAB, and in terms of Consol Glass. That's not the tax losses and everything else. The president's saying he's worried about it. Well, that's very nice. It doesn't, unfortunately, worrying about something, as you know, doesn't solve the problem. Deep concerns about the South African economy and the own goals we score.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Well, Brian Molefe at the Zondo Commission is not going down without a fight. He took the opportunity today to repeat allegations made by his successor, fellow Zondo attendee, Matsela Koko, that Glencore sold shares to President Cyril Ramaphosa before he was president, before he was deputy president, when he was still businessman Cyril Ramaphosa, to use his political power to its benefit and to ultimately disadvantage the power utility. It's a very serious allegation. It does what Molefe and Koko claim mean that an offence was committed. I simply don't know. I don't have a big enough overview of the timelines and who did what to whom and when, and whether or not the information that is selected at Zondo, of course, how selective it is. But at the time that Ramaphosa acquired shares in Glencore, he was in business. Not in politics, but that doesn't change the story as far as Brian Molefe is concerned.
The Deputy President of the Republic, Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, was the chairperson of the War Room. He was, in fact, the de facto chairperson of ESCOM, the de facto chairperson of a de facto board that was outside the company, and had started playing this role directly from being chairperson of Optimum. When the deal was done in 2012 and he was sold shares, or he bought shares, he was made chairperson. 2014, he became deputy president and chairperson of the War Room. One would have expected corporate governance requires that there must be a cooling off period precisely for things like this. Here is a person who was engaged in saying we must renegotiate. Renegotiate. That contract was signed in 2014. The contract that I founded ESCOM. We must renegotiate effectively 8 billion rand, moves and becomes the de facto chairperson of the company.
Not a tissue in sight today, you'll be pleased to hear. Molefe, of course, a man with a lot to lose, including a 30 million rand pension payout, which he was not entitled to. His lawyer saying he wouldn't incriminate himself today if he was asked about ESCOM's civil claims and other criminal charges which are being investigated into him by the Special Investigation Unit. But not to be outdone, Brian Molefe today also blaming Cyril Ramaphosa for the return of load shedding. Also, boy, oh boy, no love lost, of course, between Brian Molefe and Pravin Gordhan, who comes up a lot in the hate groups, of course, of people who are accused of lots of wrongdoing.
Load shedding came back to ESCOM after Mr. Cyril Ramaphosa, following the 1 billion rand Nasrec conference, was appointed president of the country. That's when load shedding came back. And after he was appointed president of the country, and he in turn appointed the smooth-talking and dictatorial Pravin Gordhan as Minister of Public Enterprises. The less I say about Pravin Gordhan, the better. As you see, Jefferson, despite his smooth-talking, public enterprises are failing, and it appears that they are on a course to be sold to private interests. My suspicion is that, like the javelin, they will be thrown over the fence and be caught at the later stage.
That is Brian Molefe. I mean, absolutely no acknowledgement of the history and the role, of course, played by him and many others, 10 CEOs over a period of time, some imposed, some kicked out. And I mean, just the, I think it's absolutely clear what the agenda is. But let's get the view of somebody who watches this very, very closely. And that is Ferial Hafiji, the associate editor of Daily Maverick. I mean, butter would not have melted in Brian Molefe's mouth today, Ferial.
Not at all, Bruce, and Happy New Year to you. Brian Molefe put up quite a show. It's the first time that he's had such a public stage in many...
Oh, Ferial. Let's see if we can get Ferial on a better phone line, please, because that one is not going to do what she has to say any justice what's at all. So let's get Ferial on a better phone line. I mean, he put on a good show. He hasn't had such a big stage upon which to present his ideas and his theories. I mean, he looks well. There was a time when it looked like he was about to expire, but he looks like he's well rested and has had plenty of time to get himself into some sort of better health. Ferial Hafiji, hopefully a better phone line. You said he hasn't had such a strong place to put forward his ideas before.
A very strong stage. So yes, he looked well, better than the last time we saw him crying. Beforehand, when the camera was on him, I did see that he was biting his lip quite a bit. It was obviously a big occasion for him, and certainly Bruce, Brian Molefe laid into everybody he felt he needed to. So firstly, he accused President Cyril Ramaphosa of being part of a grand conspiracy to profiteer from Eskom when he was the Black Empowerment partner of Glencore, you'll remember, and also chair of the Optimum Board at the time. And then he accused Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan of javelin throwing. So that's when you plant your seed elsewhere for future profits or a life after politics. And then he also said the former public protector Thuli Madonsela had robbed him of his natural justice. So many big accusations being made today.
Did he answer any questions about, you know, allegations against him personally? And he did talk about relationships and his either knowledge or lack of knowledge or the relationships that he had allegedly with the Guptas. And of course, he is the guy who originated the term the Saxon Wall Shebeen, based, of course, on GPS information, which was gleaned from him by Thuli Madonsela.
Absolutely. So he couldn't deny that. And as with Duduzani Zuma, the former president's son, he said that he acknowledged his friendship with all three of the Gupta brothers, mostly with Ajay Gupta. That's the oldest one, the kind of godfather figure in that family. He said, though, that he had never, ever met Salim Essa. And through all the evidence, Mr. Essa emerges as the key linchpin or the link between the state capture that happened and Eskom when Brian Molefe was the CEO. So I found that quite interesting. He also said to the judge, I appear before you and state my conscience is clear. And then he said something interesting. He said, when this nightmare is over, I think this period of investigating state capture, our country will return to normalcy. And that made me a little bit worried.
And again, it's what kind of normalcy are you hoping that it returns to? Why would that worry you? I mean, somebody who's accused of multiple criminal transgressions, why does his opinion, I mean, it's wishful thinking, possibly the wishful thinking of somebody who is out of touch with the reality of the problems that he faces.
I suppose so. But what is also interesting for me is that how Brian Molefe understands himself and how he understands his role at ESCOM. So he said repeatedly, and he told a number of anecdotes to the judge of how he had, and these are his words, defeated load shedding in August 2015. And he kept referring back, and it was a very apposite day for to do that, is that our country is still suffering from load shedding, and I'm the man who stopped that. I was the solution at ESCOM. I was the solution at Transnet, and therefore I kept being moved from these places because I was so key to freeing up our economy and making it a place where black people enjoyed the levers of that economy. He told a really interesting story, Bruce, about how he had met with the icon businessman, Sam Mutsonyani, who had said to him, why are you guys not forming this bank? Because black people need access to capital. And then he went off to Ajay Gupta and said to him, how does one start a bank? Where do you get the money from? And he introduced him to an unnamed Indian billionaire who almost immediately said, let me help you to buy out NetBank. And then he said that the SARB, the Reserve Bank, wasn't interested in that because, of course, APSA and Standard Bank have significant foreign shareholders.
The madness, the bonkersness that we have come from is being exposed in all of its glory.
I don't want to see a return to that normalcy.
I quite like new normals. Jacob Zuma also pushing back against Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo. The Deputy Chief Justice has written to him saying, look, you better come on Monday, otherwise there's going to be criminal sanction. Jacob Zuma saying, no, thank you very much. I'm still busy with the Constitutional Court. And look, it's my right to be so. Does this leave Zondo in a bit of a pickle?
Well, I suppose it's quite a day at the Zondo Commission because the poor judge had a COVID exposure. So before you could get to the meat of the questions that Advocate Seleka was going to ask of Brian Molefe, it had to stop for the day. And we're not clear whether it will continue next week when Mr. Molefe is not available. Obviously, next week was the week when the former president was meant to testify, and he's now said he's not going to, but I don't think you're going to see any strong action on Monday because actually the judge is now in isolation. I did think, though, Bruce, back to that day of the last appearances, remember that that charges have been laid at the Hillbrow police station, and I do think it's worth us going to look at what happened to those.
Thank you, Ferial Hafaji. We'll see you in Hillbrow. Associate Editor at Daily Maverick, Tenacious Ferial Hafaji this evening. Another big story on the day was Eyewitness News' exclusive interview. Clement Magnatella, Tsidi Madia, covering a whole wide range of subjects. A fabulous discussion today with the President on 702. And President Cyril Ramaphosa said that South Africa has got the money, good news, to fund COVID-19 vaccination program. The trouble is, there's enough money for that, but not enough for that and to support businesses and industries that have been crippled by the restrictions and bans on trade. And the president was saying today that he's not pleased and the ANC is not pleased with how the economy is performing. Oh, that's good. The COVID-19 constrained revenue collection, 300 billion rand shortfall. The president admitting to problems with state-owned enterprises and saying, look, a lot of money has gone to waste. And admitting, of course, that the ANC has got a huge amount to answer for in terms of its oversight of not only the fiscus and state-owned enterprises and so much of the corruption that the country has seen. But yeah, and change, he says, is urgent.
Well, it's been a combination of a number of things. Firstly, the economy has not been growing at levels that would please any amongst us. Now, what COVID then did was it also constrained our revenue collection. We've got a 300 billion rand shortfall in revenue collection, which is quite a lot of money. But at the same time, yes, there have been a number of challenges in our state-owned enterprises where a lot of money has also either gone to waste. So,
not a portion to the ANC government.
I would say that, yes, we can apportion blame. But the fact of the matter is we've got to deal with the problem going forward. And that should be our focus right now. My focus now is to say, how do we get out of this hole? We are in a hole. And rather than be at the bottom of the hole and say, you are to blame, you are to blame, I'm saying,
and that part of the problem.
Of course, I mean, we do, but we want to build the ladder and get out of this hole.
I actually agree with him. It's not his job to blame. Oh, lots of people cross now. Good. It's not his job to fix the problems of the past. It's his job to fix the economy. It's your job to blame. And if you're agitated enough, you vote someone in that you believe will do better. It's your job to blame. It's not his job to go and find and prosecute the guilty. That's the job of the National Prosecuting Authority. It is his job to make sure that they can do their job without fear or favour. Absolutely. And yesterday, he strengthened the National Prosecuting Authority and gave it a little bit of muscle. And yes, it is his job to lead the policy changes needed to get the economy growing. So yes, he shouldn't be wasting his time on finger-pointing and blame. He should be focusing his time and energy, as I think he's trying to do, on fixing. First 27 years of our democracy is focused, understandably, on redistribution. But it's not nearly enough. Not nearly enough focus on growth. And without growth, there can be no distribution. That is the point. Dr. Azhar Jameen is chief economist at Econometrics. And welcome to The Money Show, Dr. Azhar Jameen. Just so much going on at the moment in terms of the economy and the shortfalls. And the president's acknowledgement today is, there is money for COVID-19 vaccines, but not enough to support business and industries that have been crippled by the bans on trade and the huge restrictions that are being put on it. Something has to give at some point. Any ideas as to where we're going?
At the moment, what we are facing is an economy that is likely to be a little weaker than we were hoping for in 2021, given all the restrictions that have been imposed on it. Having said that, I think one needs to get a little bit of perspective. The real huge damage was inflicted by levels 5 and 4 lockdowns in April and May last year, when huge sectors of the economy were virtually shut down. And here one's talking about manufacturing, mining, construction, much of retail, much of transport, all virtually shut down. Only around 50% of the economy was operating. We have got new restrictions right now, and certainly the alcoholic drinks industry is taking a hammering. So too are the leisure activities and hospitality industries and restaurants. But if you add them all together, that is not anywhere near as big a hit as what we experienced back in April and May. I'm just trying to paint a slightly more nuanced context to what we're currently experiencing. And so when we come to comparing this year with last year, we will be comparing against a devastated base in the second quarter of last year. And so we ought still to come out with some positive growth this year. But clearly it is insufficient, and clearly, given what you mentioned, I totally agree, it's insufficient to generate the kind of tax revenues needed to ameliorate the dreadful fiscal situation in which we find ourselves in.
Yeah, and this is the great difficulty, of course. And then we listen to the nonsense of the State Capture Commission that is being spouted on a daily basis by people who are accused of very serious crimes. And you just want people to get on already so that we can move on with the job of fixing the economy without the distractions and the noise and the attempts at, wheedling out of their responsibilities.
Yes, I think the only ray of hope here is that somehow a lot of the different elements of the economy manage to somehow continue operating, notwithstanding all the nonsense that we are facing. But it is leaving a lasting legacy, and this is a lasting negative legacy. And this is what concerns me. The rate of emigration is just accelerating all the time, and we are losing more and more skills and depriving the economy of its ability in the longer term to recapture a growth path. That is what is concerning me. Not so much the short term, it's just the longer term impact.
It's a case of wanting to get the position, thank you, Dr. Charles Jameen, and getting confidence back. And confidence is the best form of stimulus, of course, in any economy. But you're not going to get confidence, and people aren't going to be changing their minds about the future unless you give them a reason to do so. And right now, they're not nearly enough reasons. Azhar Jameen, thank you very much indeed.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Daily market commentary brought to you by Telkom Business. They'll beat any fixed line voice and internet quote or invoice. Email beatmyquote at telkom.co.za. T's and C's apply. David Peacock from Sunlum Private Wealth tonight. We ended the week with markets up a bit, currency a bit stronger. On balance, not a bad week.
Yeah, Bruce, I would agree with you. We've had a good, strong start to the year. The currency has definitely strengthened quite nicely in the last while. In fact, at the moment, it's trading below 1520. So that's quite positive. We came off a little bit off our highs at the end of today. And in fact, you know, you've seen a bit of weakness coming through in our market. And then you're also seeing a bit of weakness coming through in the U.S. this evening as well.
The U.S. is interesting because Joe Biden unveiling a $1.9 trillion, that's a huge amount of dollars, stimulus plan for the U.S. economy, and saying, look, the moment he gets into office, it'll have to be passed by Congress, of course, but there'll be $1 trillion for households. That means $1,400 to all Americans. That's pretty good going. And that's what he hopes will kickstart the U.S. economy. That means more money slushing around the U.S. economy. It also, and this is where some people are concerned, is the possible stimulus for inflation into the future.
I agree with you, Bruce. And you know, if you look at what's happened with U.S. Treasuries and the 10-year in the last while, it is starting to give an indication that that is something that the market, you know, really needs to take care of. So clearly that is starting to reflect on the market. The second thing is that as part of his stimulus package, he also made mention of raising taxes. And I think that caught the market off guard somewhat, because in terms of his sort of pre-election commentary, that was something that he was looking at in the longer term. But it looks like, given this new stimulus package, and obviously, you know, trying to get this market to continue, he's got to go and look for these taxes somewhere else. But clearly, what you're also seeing at the moment is this issue of inflation and the impact that's going to have. And Powell said, you know, earlier on this week that, you know, interest rates are going to stay where they are for now.
And that is, I mean, until there is a sign of inflation, until there's a concern that inflation could start picking up and running away, and the bond market is reflecting a possible rise in inflation, although none of that happened after the massive stimulus of 2008-2009, so there's no reason to suggest that it's going to happen this time round. The money just went into pushing asset prices up. I mean, it's the great unknown for not only the U.S. economy, but the global economy, and ultimately it has an impact on us as well, bizarrely enough.
Absolutely, Bruce. And you know, unfortunately, it is a bit of a case of deja vu, because, you know, as long as, you know, the punch bowl remains open, you know, you're going to continue to see this, the strength in U.S. markets. You know, and some of the results that started coming out today, I mean, the banks and that are getting fantastic returns because of the strength in the equity market that we've seen in the last while. So as long as that continues, the stimulus continues, you know, we're fine. Obviously, you know, the vaccine added to that will help, you know, keep the economy moving and getting people back to work and getting the unemployment levels, whether they be in Europe or America, and then hopefully in South Africa as well. If the vaccine comes in as a second line, you know, clearly that will add a lot more support to the market, and then obviously to economies.
David Peacock, thank you. He is with Sunlum Private Wealth.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by Absa Corporate and Investment Banking, with secure cash management solutions for ultimate efficiency. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
Best bits of the Money Show between 7 and 8 this evening after Eyewitness News. Before that, the Brutal Biz Quiz and a little bit of affordable luxury coming up in a moment or two on our Friday file. See, Joe Biden has given his new official presidential Twitter account an airing, but he's had to start it with zero followers because he wants a new at POTUS account, because the last one, that guy, got himself banned, didn't he? Got himself kicked off, got himself told, you are the weakest link, goodbye, or whatever, you're fired. That was it. In 6 hours, Joe Biden got 400,000 followers on the @PrezElectBiden. He'll transform that into the official @POTUS title on Inauguration Day, 20th of January, the moment he is inaugurated. Donald Trump managed to get 13 million or so followers automatically as a result of him inheriting Barack Obama's account. But that's not going to happen this time. And so, yeah, Donald Trump had a head start. I suppose the advantage that Joe Biden has is he doesn't inherit the loony followers that chose to follow Donald Trump, I guess, on that particular front. On the next Money Show, news anchor, TV presenter Melanie Bala on Other People's Money, most recognized and respected personalities in broadcasting. Our business books feature, we'll talk to Richard Sutton, got a brand new book out, Stress Proof, The Game Plan, Responsibility of Business Leadership, Productivity, Support in the Workplace, particularly in a time of lockdown. Next time on The Money Show.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Iwaigwe Yahen is the founder and owner of Chill Cape Town. Now, if you're looking for affordable luxury, and I think so often when you're looking to buy creams and fragrances and products, there is so much available and comes from all over the world. And there's some really big brand products which are very good and lovely and expensive. It's good to have local production. Iwaigwe, when did you start Chill Cape Town?
Thank you, Bruce, for having me. It's a pleasure to be able to share the story of Chill Cape Town with you and the viewers. I started Chill Cape Town in October 2019, actually. So it's a very relatively new brand. We started 6 months before the unfortunate lockdown. And so we've only been in business for just over a year. And yeah, we're still here, despite the limitations of restrictions that we all are privy to over the last few months.
Well, what was the journey that led you in October 2019 to starting a, and would you call yourself, you're not a cosmetics brand, what are you, a potions yeah. brand?
Good question. We are a lifestyle brand at its core, but we are also a skincare and wellness
skincare.
Brand.
Skincare, got you.
So that's what informs our the products that we do have on market. And so we sell a range of all natural skincare products that have been developed in Cape Town using botanicals exclusively from South Africa and the African continent. The intention is to showcase natural products of the African continent in a fresh new light that is accessible to both a local audience as well as an international audience.
And what's your background? I mean, do you have a mixology degree of some description?
No. I come from actually a different end of the spectrum. I'm actually from the Caribbean and Nigeria, and I come from a corporate background. I'm an economist by training, and I've lived in a variety of countries. Most recently, Switzerland, before I relocated to South Africa. And moving to South Africa, the intention was always to start a business focused on showcasing what we have on the continent. And obviously, we talk a lot about the resource paradox that we face on the continent, where we produce a lot of the raw materials that are then exported to other places. And so for me, I'd always suffered from skin allergies and sensitivities, like an increasing amount of people around the world. And I thought to myself, look, I'm in South Africa. I'm moving from a fast-paced corporate environment to a beautiful city with nature, with access to nature, with access to, you know, a very relaxed lifestyle. There must be something I can do here. And that's really how Chill Cape Town came about. And, you know, I've always produced my own shea butters and mango butters, etc., to kind of treat my eczema. And so I decided, listen, let me tap into the resources of people here, people who are chemists, people who are dermatologists, people who work with botanicals, pharmacists, etc., to come up with something that we can do together collaboratively. And so that's how Chill Cape Town emerged. And Chill Cape Town celebrates the best, I think, of not only South Africa and its people and its lifestyle, but also the continent and what we can do with the resources that we have here.
I mean, we keep talking about beneficiating resources, and as an economist, you can understand this idea of beneficiation. I mean, there's no greater beneficiation than the beneficiation of natural resources, and that's precisely what you're doing. Who's your market? Yeah. How are you accessing your market?
Yes, my market is actually quite varied, and it's been an interesting journey. Because originally the intention has always been to service the local market first, the South African market first. And the thinking behind the range is really to present consumers with simple, clean, even one ingredient products. And we found that it's taken a while for South Africans, the average South African, to buy into that concept. We see it happening, but we've got an overwhelming response from the overseas market. As you can imagine, there is a huge and growing demand for natural cosmetics and natural beauty products, both in Europe and the United States. And we, as South Africa, we are a net exporter of some of the most premium oils that go into producing these, you know, premium beauty products that you find in Europe and North America. And so when I initially put out my range on the market, obviously we got a South African clientele quickly, but we also saw quite a really encouraging demand from elsewhere as well.
Which is nice. And the fact that you're still standing after being in existence just for 6 months by the time the first lockdown struck suggests that you have got an inbuilt and quite strong resilience. Or do you just have some wealthy benefactors in the background?
No. It's not wealthy benefactors at all. It's me, myself, and I, and my pockets are not as deep as that. No, I think we just have a story, and we just have a purpose that people understand and people that resonates with people. As I mentioned, people increasingly are disillusioned by what they see in the marketplace, the plethora of fragrances, of toxins, of plastic, etc., on shelves. And so they're becoming a little bit more discerning with the choices that they make. They want to buy local, they want to buy green, they want to buy into brands that have a social conscience, as well as an environmental conscience. And so we as a company, we also kind of emphasize that in all of our marketing, in all of our interactions with customers. For instance, all of our products are sold in glass bottles. It costs us as a small company to make that investment, but at the end of the day, we see it as a responsibility of ours. We also are engaged with NGOs working on women's issues. And again, that's a way to kind of get the message out about who we are. And I think because of that, people really rally around the brand. Plus, it also helps that we are named Chill Cape Town. And this idea, in a world where people are increasingly plugged into their phones, there are increasing demands on your time, there's a need to kind of just relax, take it easy. Hey. And so automatically, I think when they hear Chill Cape Town, they say, yeah, we can vibe with that.
Listen, thank you so much for joining us this evening. It's a lovely story, and I wish you luck with it, and congratulations for surviving the lockdowns. Iwaikoe Iahen this evening on The Money Show. Out of practice, quick question for you. Peter Boone becomes the chief executive of which company in April? 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Peter Boone becomes the chief executive of which company from April this year? He's replacing somebody who's been in the job for the last 8 years. Some discussion around the fact that this company used to promote from within and was started by a South African who handed over to a South African who handed over to a South African who then handed over to the incumbent. Now, Peter Boone becomes the second global CEO. And South Africa's got this sort of love affair with international CEOs, particularly in the retail sector. It's really interesting. 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. I'm not picking on this company specifically because I think it's a trend. And maybe it's a case of the fact that because the world is so competitive and South Africa really has had these oligopolies in this particular industry for so long that they haven't had to be particularly competitive. They haven't had to be particularly proficient at what they do. They've had to compete against each other, and we'll tell you that it's a cutthroat business. But yeah, it's interesting to see lots of foreign CEOs coming to South Africa. Sudhir in Greenstone, good evening to you. Which company is Peter Boone going to be chief executive of?
Hi, Bruce. That's Pick n Pay.
It is, and Pieter Boon is Dutch, born in the Netherlands, worked for the German retailer Metro, and he is replacing the British-born Richard Brasher. Which German bank has cut ties with Donald Trump following the assaults on the U.S. Capitol last week? Donald Trump, of course, impeached for the second time this week and becomes the first person in history to be impeached twice. But the German bank cutting ties with Donald Trump.
That's the Dutch Bank.
Pardon?
I think, is it the Dutch Bank? Dutch Bank, D-E-U-T-C-H-E?
Well, as you spelt it, Deutsche, I will take Deutsche, because Dutch Bank is a completely different thing. But Deutsche Bank, next door, is German. Absolutely right, cutting ties with him. I would like to know, please, from you this evening, to make you the whiz of the Brutal Biz quiz, at least two more answers to questions. I'd like to know which social media platform is planning to permanently ban Donald Trump after he leaves the presidency. And again, you've got to be quick on this one. Got to be quick on this one, Sudhir.
Twitter.
No, Sudhir, you see, look at that. You know, I'm not going tweet, am I? No, I'm not, Sudhir. I'm not doing that. I'm doing which social network wants to ban him. Oh. Which one? Sudhir, thank you for playing. Mark in Four Ways. Mark in Four Ways, which social platform wants to ban Donald Trump completely after he leaves the presidency? Mark.
Hello.
Yes, there you are.
It's me again. Mark from Four Ways. This time I want your book, man.
I'm not giving away another one. Do you know what it costs to courier a book? I mean, I gave one to Levi. Levi won it. And
I'm sitting in load shedding listening to you on my stoop outside. So you're asking which social media is banning Donald Trump.
I did.
Twitter.
Quickly, Mark. No, it's not Twitter. No, Mark. Oh, I mean, you're very nice about wanting the book and stuff. And you're going to have to go to the shops and buy it. I'm not giving away a book this evening. I can't afford the courier charges. If the post office worked, today, by the way, is the day that Mark Barnes's contract with the post office should have ended. Mark Barnes posting on social media today on Twitter that had he been allowed to, he didn't get fired, he left because government didn't like his strategy of how he was going to turn around and actually fix the post office, and that their turnaround would have happened. Instead, they've gone back into shambles, and there's R1 billion lost, was it half a billion? Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's lots of money lost again. We're not going to get a Wiz of the Biz quiz this evening. I blame myself because I didn't throw the questions out early enough. The social media platform planning to permanently ban Donald Trump is Snap. Chat. Absolutely. Snapchat. Next week, we'll be back in the groove properly. Thank you for tolerating me on this first week back. I'm looking forward to joining you again next week, of course. But do stay tuned, because after Eyewitness News, best bits of The Money Show from the week that has been. That's coming up next.